Not the Witch of Endor.
That's not maybe the Apocrypha.
I would.
Hold
like
on. I'll Google it as we go. Okay.
Exodus 22:18.
That's the heart of it. All right, I'll check it
Thou
out.
Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live.
But give me a real good translation from the Hebrew that doesn't come out of the King James.
This is the Quality News Network. In Myanmar, it is the second day of the government crackdown on pro-democracy protesters. 9 people were killed as security forces fired automatic weapons into the crowds. Tens of thousands of protesters, many of whom are monks, have demonstrated in the country's largest city for 10 days in a row. There are also reports that overnight government forces raided several monasteries. Monks were reportedly beaten and more than 100 were arrested. The U.S. will impose economic sanctions against Myanmar in response to the recent military crackdown. The U.S. Treasury Department will freeze assets of the 14 military officials who have led the action. NBC News reports that last month a U.S. and Afghan military mission in Tora Bora almost captured a high-value target believed to possibly be Osama bin Laden. The operation took place over 3 days and nights and left dozens of al-Qaeda and Taliban members dead. According to a congressional investigation, the actions of private security company Blackwater USA caused a battle in Iraq in 2004 that killed 4 of the U.S. guards in Fallujah. Their bodies were then mutilated and dragged, and this triggered a major month-long conflict. The report found that the security guards were unprepared to go into the insurgent stronghold. In Iraq, the country's vice president, a Sunni, met with the top Shiite cleric. They are trying to agree on political reforms that would unite the country and end the violence. More than 50 people were killed in Iraq yesterday in a wave of bombings and shootings. Al-Qaeda has promised a new offensive during the current holy month of Ramadan. Iran's president is in Bolivia as part of a trip to strengthen his country's ties to Latin America. He is seen by some leftist leaders as a way to counter U.S. influence, especially as an energy and trade partner. The Senate voted today on hate crimes legislation to protect gays, which is attached to a Pentagon spending bill. However, a Republican senator predicts President Bush will veto the legislation. At the New Hampshire debate last night among the Democratic candidates for president in 2008, the 3 leading hopefuls admitted they cannot guarantee that all U.S. combat troops will be pulled out of Iraq by 2013, the end of their first term. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News next.
Do you know the expression, put on your best face? Never was that suggestion more important, especially in the increasingly fast-paced world of the Internet. The people at Byte Technology are experts in making sure that the hits their clients' websites receive turn into a satisfying visit and more business. Byte gets to the core of every business and brings the heart of the operation to the Internet. Whether you are selling products or services, reaching out for new business, or supplying information to a sector of the business community, it is vital that you attract the right visitors and deliver them what they need quickly and effectively. Byte Technology goes further, providing maintenance updates to keep your site ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Assure your company's future. Talk with the team at Byte Technology to learn how you can put on your best internet face. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Tropical storm Lorenzo is forming off of Mexico's Gulf Coast. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says the tropical depression is getting stronger with top winds of up to 60 miles an hour. At the start of a 2-day climate meeting in Washington called by President Bush, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice challenged other countries to find ways to become more environmentally friendly without hurting their economies. She stressed that the U.S. prefers voluntary, not one-size-fits-all measures. President Bush signed legislation today that increases the amount of tuition assistance available to poor and middle-class students. He said the bill helps them earn a college degree. The Labor Department reports that last week the number of new applications for jobless benefits fell by 15,000 to 298,000, which is a 4-year low. The Commerce Department reports that in August, new home sales fell by 8.3%. Gold is trading at $739.90 an ounce. ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $82.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And near the close of Wall Street today, stocks are up. The Dow Jones is up 35 points at 13,912. The NASDAQ up 11 points and the S&P 500 up 6 points. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the week in review. Heck, it's a couple weeks in review. There's a lot to talk about after the calmness and deadness of August. September is always a very busy news time. Everything from Don't Tase Me, Bro. I haven't had a chance to talk about the person asking a question. Could be me, guys. I do those kinds of things. An audience who was in a speech by John Kerry, who was taken out and tased, to the Republican filibuster of habeas corpus. I guess freedom is not an American value. I do want to talk about the Gen 6. We've talked about them in the past, but it always bears pointing out the continuing racism in America, and especially how it plays today. I want to talk about Dan Rather's story. Not a lot of people have talked about him a lot lately, but he's seeking vindication, and I think he deserves it. And after all, George Bush did go AWOL. I did a story on this, it's now 3.5 years ago, where I have the documents in the Freedom of Information Act, the documents that no one has disputed, show that George Bush was AWOL. But the mainstream press is obviously focusing on Dan Rather. We'll move to the Middle East, talk about Hamas strengthening its rule over the Gaza Strip, Israel's decision not to give electricity to the Gaza Strip, which continues to rain hundreds of missiles a day into Israeli towns, and the decision of the United Nations, Europeans, pressing Israel not to stop the electricity. And so Israel's actually backed off. I disagree. I think that's the least Israel should do, is stop electricity to a country that is regularly invading it with missiles. And a very interesting story with all kinds of possibilities of whether Israel bombed a Syrian nuclear plant and what that has to do with Syria and Iran, everything going on. I'm going to talk about S-CHIP. See, I got too many topics to talk about, friends. That's why you're going to have to help me decide which one's the most important. But we've talked about S-CHIP before, the state children's health insurance program. To me, nothing clarifies the difference between the parties more than the idea of the Democrats that children should have health care and the Republicans' idea that poor children should just die. Just die. Get out of our way. Don't you know that rich children need room to walk? So all these things to discuss, and whatever you want to talk about, it is the Week in Review. All topics are valid. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, and I do want to hear from you on any topic you want to discuss. So let's just take it step by step. And again, I really want to encourage you to call in this, because, you know, the Week in Review is as much about you as about me. I can't talk about all these issues. There's not enough time. Let's start with Don't Tase Me, Bro. I really think if there's a phrase for our decade, we live in the decade that has no name, right? There's the 70s, there's the 80s, there's the 90s. What's the name of our decade? I mean, we're already here at 2007, and people haven't named it. Now, I've called this decade the O's. I hope it catches on, but apparently I'm the only one that's done that. But in any case, what is the message of the O's? To me, it's Don't Tase Me, Bro. That's just a great expression. I don't know if any of you have seen, I expect most of you have seen now, the video on YouTube where you have a questioner doing what questioners do of speakers like John Kerry, asking questions. And he asks about the elections, whether they were stolen or not, and he asks about John Kerry, whether he was in Skull and Bones. Absolutely fair questions. Now, maybe the questioner overstayed his welcome. I don't know. I really probably should see a longer clip from it. Remind me note to self to watch that. But it's funny. I have been on panels all across the country. I speak out fairly frequently, and probably the biggest panel I'm on is every year in Colorado, where they have the Conference on World Affairs. And I assure you, we have questioners that come up and drone on and are told to ask a question, not make a statement, and they go ahead and they make a 10-minute statement before they ask a question. But when questioners do that, what happens? Well, it's a little bit of peer pressure, a little bit of ostracism. The audience actually starts moaning. You know, ask your question, you know, hurry up, sit down. And yes, you can abuse it as a questioner. But the idea that you could be arrested in America for asking a question of a politician is so abhorrent, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, don't tase me, bro. Think about what that means. Bro, it's a friendly phrase. What he's saying is, you know, the kid who's saying, why are you arresting me? I didn't do anything wrong. Don't tase me, bro. It's like, why are you violently attacking me, friend? I'm not against you. I'm not saying, you know, kill the police. I'm just trying to ask a question here. And maybe, you know, maybe the kid was obnoxious. There are obnoxious questioners. I mean, look, I've asked questions of people in political gatherings. But they arrest him? And then they tase him? It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. And, you know, as you watch, and you watch the students sitting there, now, I don't know what they should have done. John Kerry, frankly, didn't stand up in the occasion. He could have said, officer, stop that. Stop that, officer. Let him ask his question. I mean, he did say at the beginning, I'll answer the question. But even John Kerry seemed hopeless. And to me, Don't Tase Me, Bro, really is the theme of our era, of our decade, of the O's. It's, hey, don't wiretap me, bro. Big bro, big brother. Don't listen into my phone calls. I haven't done anything wrong. Don't put me in jail without giving me a chance to challenge. Don't take away my rights from the Constitution. Don't tase me, bro. It's an amazing thing, really, because in America, we are just not used to a police state. That's why it's such a great phrase, don't tase me, bro. It's not, you know, you lousy cops, I can think of a, you know, you pigs with a bunch of curse words, you know, don't touch me, don't tase me. It's, hey, I'm just trying to work with you as fellow citizens here. Don't tase me, bro. I don't know. I think that really is a theme for our times. And really, it's a good contrast, I think, to what happened at Columbia University, where there was a large hue and outcry over whether to invite the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad. And the Colombian president, the president of Columbia University, decided to invite him, but to use free speech to challenge him. Now, that's the American way. Harsh speech, but free speech. We talk with each other. We address strongly people with whom we disagree. We ask questions of our leaders. We certainly don't take people out for asking a question and then electronically tase them. Jeez. But this is what's going on in America. I mean, here we have, at the same time, we have a filibuster over the resumption of habeas corpus, which sounds like a mouthful, but is actually fundamental to American human rights. What is habeas corpus? Latin, to have the body. It says if you're put in prison, you can say to the government, hey, what are you doing that for? It's a principle that comes from English law that's 1,000 years old and says you can't just randomly put people in prison. You can't tase someone for asking a question of a politician. You can't put someone in prison without a reason. If you got a reason, put them in prison. You got a killer, you got a murderer, put him in jail. No problem. Prove it beyond a reasonable doubt before a jury of his or her peers. Lock the son of a bitch away. That's fine. But the Republican Congress, and a lot of people don't even remember when they did this. They did this in 06, just before the elections, signed by George Bush, took away habeas corpus, despite the fact that the bill is blatantly unconstitutional. The Constitution says you cannot suspend habeas corpus except in cases of invasion or rebellion. And we have never had such a resumption except in cases of invasion or rebellion. The one example would be rebellion, the Civil War. Lincoln suspended briefly habeas corpus, citing the exception under the Constitution. So the Republicans, blatantly in disregard of the Constitution, have taken away the most basic American freedom, one that dates back to English freedoms. Hey, we tried to get away from George III. This is a freedom that dates back 1,000 years. This is one of those English freedoms we actually had back then. And now the Democrats are trying to resume it. And what are the Republicans doing? They're filibustering. They're saying you got to have 60 votes, and we don't have 60 Democrats in the Senate. Filibustering over a basic human right. And I think they're betting, I really think they're betting, that Americans have no idea what's going on. That habeas corpus is this Latin legal phrase that most Americans have no idea. That what it really means is the Republican Party believes and stands firm, so firm they're unwilling to even let the issue come up for debate. The primary principle of the Republican Party is we believe in a police state. They can throw you in jail without a reason. Think the Soviet Union is dead? Nope, it's alive and well in the Republican Party. If you want to call in and address these issues or any of the ones I've raised here on the Week in Review, please do. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of 6 or 7 different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. it's water saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It is the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Feel free to give a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. This week, well, actually, a little bit last week, was the 50th anniversary, of course, of the integration of Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. People who study the event are surprised to learn that Little Rock, like most of the cities of the Upper South, was relatively peaceful, relatively integrating prior to the incident at Little Rock. I am from Nashville, Tennessee, and Nashville, Tennessee was a southern city that was relatively peaceful, relatively integrating, and I understand it's relative, okay? I'm not saying it was completely peaceful, but compared to the Deep South, Selma, Alabama, and Greensboro, North Carolina, and Birmingham, and a whole host of deep southern cities, it was relatively peaceful. That is until the governor, Orville Faubus, decided to make a political issue of it. He was originally a moderate Southern governor, again moderate by the terms of, you know, by the political spectrum of that time, definitely not moderate by today's standard. But he was seen as, you know, believing in integration and that it should happen maybe slowly. And then he ran against a candidate who was virulently racist, whereas Faubus was only subtly racist. And at which point, when he lost that race, he said, "I will never be out N-word again." Oh, heck, to get the real force of it. He said, "I'll never be out niggered again," which tells you something about him and the times. And then what did he do? He decided to call out the Arkansas National Guard to defy federal law and to prevent 9 young, scared but proud African-Americans, kids, from attending high school in Little Rock, and finally forcing the president's hand. President Eisenhower was not exactly someone who was terrific on civil rights, but forcing his hand when he recognized that, as in the Civil War, you can't have a state defy federal authority. So here we are, 50 years from Little Rock, a time that seems to many to be way beyond us. I think many Americans living in big cities and live, you know, Washington, D.C., or where I live, or even in Nashville, Tennessee, frankly, where I grew up, see what happened in 1957, Little Rock, Arkansas, to be almost unbelievable. I mean, I've talked with my mother about black water fountains and white water fountains in the South. She's from Nashville, Tennessee. And it just sounds like another era, much as people think that, you know, the Holocaust sounds like a complete other era, when really both events are, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. Certainly there are people alive that remember all of them. But think again. When you look at what happened in Jena, Louisiana, you realize that in some places in America, it's 1957 all over again. What happened in Jena? Well, by now, you know the basics of the story. We've talked about this before, by the way. I did a show on Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C., that I played right here on the horn, that you can still find, where we talked in detail about Jena months before this ever became a huge national issue. And I actually want to praise the groups that went down to Jena that are making the mainstream press sit up and take notice of Jena. Because there were just a few of us talking about it before this week and last week. But basically, there was a tree It was a battle over a tree they called the White Tree. A tree, you know, that gave shade in the hot Louisiana sun. A tree where white students prevented black students from sitting. The black students went to the principal, school administrator, and the principal, instead of understanding that this was likely to degenerate into a real problem, instead of going in and finding out who the students were and sitting them down and saying, "Were you preventing this student from sitting under the tree because he's black?" And let them respond. Let them say, "Oh, no, sir, no, we weren't doing that." And then the kid can sit under the tree and everything's fine, right? Or if the kids say, "Yes, we were preventing him from being under the tree because he's black," well, then the principal could take action right then and there. This principal didn't do that. He just said to the black student, "Sit wherever you want." Understanding that really he couldn't say, "Don't sit there." It's against the law. "Sit wherever you want. Go ahead." So black students started to sit under the trees that day, and the next day they found three nooses hanging from the tree. Three nooses hanging on the tree. Now, I don't have to tell the Horn audience what that means. I don't have to tell the Horn audience the long history of lynching as a way to enforce Jim Crow. But the principal in Jenna, Louisiana, apparently didn't understand that. He, who should know far more than us the history of Jim Crow and lynching and the significance of those nooses, he poo-pooed it. It's just a prank. And it's interesting now, as we have a bill preventing hate crimes going through Congress right now. Congress, the Democrats have done a very smart thing. They've attached the hate crimes bill, which George Bush does not want to sign, to a Pentagon appropriation bill, which he does want to sign. Good move. That's exactly how they're supposed to do it. But those nooses tell you the difference between a crime and a hate crime. They were intended to provoke. They were intended to cause violence. That those nooses were much like a burning cross. Now, do people have the right to free speech? They do, but not on school property. And if you think tying a rope to a tree, it's a defacement of school property. It's vandalism. It's a tiny crime. It's a misdemeanor. It's a $50 fine. If you think there is no difference between tying a rope on a tree or carving your initials into the tree and tying a noose on the tree, then you have no idea what race in America is all about. If you think there is no difference between burning leaves on your neighbor's lawn and burning a cross on your neighbor's lawn, if you think those are two completely identical acts, as the President of the United States does, since he's against hate crimes legislation, then you really don't understand race in America. The message was clear. Stay out. Stay in your place. Now, the principal, I guess realizing that originally he said the wrong thing, did the wrong thing by saying, just go wherever you want, he expelled the students. And that expulsion, the white students, the ones that hung the nooses, there was no violence at this point. He expelled the students. That was appropriate. And what happened? He was overturned by the school board and the superintendent. They said it was, quote, an adolescent prank, and they gave them a 3-day suspension. Even the local district attorney spoke at an assembly. People were very angry. He said, stop complaining about an innocent prank. And then he said to the protesters, the African-American protesters, see this pen? I can end your lives with the stroke of a pen. I can end your lives with the stroke of a pen. Now you have the district attorney of the county being more vicious than the white students under the white tree with their nooses. The black students tried to go to the school board. The school board said, no, it was handled fine. It was handled fine. And there was still no violence. And then someone set the high school on fire. We don't know the race of the arsonist. They've never been caught. Only then did attacks lead to more attacks. And then the 6 black students who got involved in a fight, which frankly, compared to the nooses, I think, I've seen schoolyards fight before. The guy apparently went to a party that evening, so he couldn't get beaten up too bad. Those 6, they're the ones in jail. But I want you to think, and I want to talk about this when we get back, I want you to think about how the event in Jena could have been handled, should have been handled. What if you were the principal? What if you were the school board? How would you handle such an event as happened in Jena? Let me know. I'll tell you my views. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll come right back with how to handle racial incidents the appropriate way when we come back.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Once again, the U.S. Senate, including many Democrats, gave Bush and Cheney more impetus, as if they need any, to go attack Iran. By a lopsided 76-22 vote, the Senate passed an amendment co-sponsored by John Kyle and the execrable Joe Lieberman that asserted that Iran is seeking to fight a proxy war against the Iraqi state and coalition forces. Senator Jim Webb of Virginia accurately termed this amendment Dick Cheney's fondest pipe dream. Remember, Cheney suggested that Congress last session had essentially green-lighted action against Iran. This was after the Democrats stripped language from a bill demanding that the Bush administration explicitly seek congressional approval before launching any attack on Iran. Now Cheney's got a congressional resolution that asserts that Iran is already waging a proxy war against the U.S. Bush and Cheney certainly don't feel they need anybody's invitation to go bomb Iran, but they just got one, and it was signed by, among others, Hillary Clinton, who by the day is showing herself more and more willing to continue the warfare state, both in Iraq and in Iran. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. Bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on a lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here, nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Let me tell you why I like working on the horn on the Head On Radio Network. I like it for lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons is I love working with Bob and Agnes Kincaid. By the way, if you haven't heard already, let me be the first to report that Agnes Kincaid's surgery has gone well. She's in good health, and we can all breathe a sigh of relief. One of the things I like working about Bob is that he goes and he looks at the list on my website, the Week in Review. I've got seven things there, and he realizes that I spent more than half the time, and I'm only on number three. And so he kindly invites me, without any prompting on my part, to continue on to his show, which begins at the top of the hour, and I am honored to do that. Bob and I have some really good discussions, so I will be continuing. I will get to my whole list. I will be continuing in the Week in Review on to Bob Kincaid's hour, and two and three. No, not all that long, but at least into his next hour. After conclusion of this show. So let's go back to Jenna. And what is the appropriate action? Really, when you think about it, it wasn't that hard at all. This opportunity, this action, the white tree in and of itself, frankly, should have done this, but certainly after the nooses, presented a tremendous opportunity to give a learning lesson to students. I mean, think about it. These are high school students in a small town in Louisiana in the Deep South. The school administrators, the principal, the school board had a tremendous opportunity to heal the students and the community. Imagine if they had said, all right, we're going to have a day devoted to dealing with issues of race. Let's talk about it. Let's have a day, where at least a day, maybe a week, but I think really just you could have done it all in one very powerful day, where you talk about the history of Jim Crow, you talk about lynchings, you show photos of African Americans beaten in the South, whipped generally, hung from trees, you show the lynchings, and you require the suspended students to attend, because it isn't really about their suspension so much. And then what you're going to do is at the end you're going to see whether they're really regretful or not, whether they're truly crying and regretful. And if they're not, you expel them. And if they are, then I think they could do some community service. Actually, you can stay in school, let them work in an African American church, doing janitorial work, for example, say every day after school for the rest of the year. That might be a good way to deal with it, with those individuals. But it was a great opportunity to teach the entire student body a lesson about history, a lesson about racial tensions. You could show the lynchings. You could show Martin Luther King and the March on Washington. You could have people describe from their perspectives how it felt. How does it feel to be excluded? You could have people, I think a great guest would be a reformed racist. Maybe a white adult that that was a student in 1950s in Little Rock or Jena or anywhere else come in and talk about how wrong they were. This was a tremendous opportunity. These are the kind of opportunities that don't come up in teaching very often, where you could take an entire dynamic and change it for the good. And all the discussion of the Genesis and all the discussion of, that the kids weren't punished enough, that hung the nooses, and I don't think they were. And then, of course, free the African-Americans who were way over the top punished for, in effect, fighting back. Think how this could have been averted. You know, it's interesting. I think I should share an experience from Yale Law School to show that if this isn't a question of small-town Louisiana, those ignorant people in the South, they're all racist. I should tell you about something that happened at Yale Law School, which is not in the South. It's in New Haven, Connecticut, and it's a place where people pride themselves on intelligence and all kinds of things. It's one of them elite Ivy League institutions. We had a racial incident. We did. Somebody, I don't know who, put a number of racist pamphlets in a number of black students' mailboxes when I was at Yale. And, of course, the entire community that spoke out was horrified. There may have been some closet racists who didn't, but certainly no one openly defended this. But nonetheless, the student body and the professors jointly saw it as a tremendous opportunity, and we had a full day devoted to race relations in America and on the campus. And it was an amazing, and it's one of, I can't say I remember any specific day very much in law school, certainly none as I remember this one day. And the community came together, and they did all kinds of, we even did some interesting workshops. I remember one workshop, we were all sort of assigned to a room, and I thought it was random, and I walked in the room, and everyone in that room was white. And I remember opening the door and thinking, whoa! It was very strange to me to see a sea of entirely white faces. And apparently the blacks had their room, and the Asians had their room, and Latinos had their room. And it was interesting to actually segregate as a teaching tool on the basis of race and to talk about that experience. But my point is this. We can talk about injustice, and there was injustice at Jena. And we can talk about, the horror, and we can stereotype the South. To me, what this really was, above all, was a lost opportunity. And how any educator couldn't have taken that opportunity, I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. All right, I want to move on to my next story. Dan Rather, seeking vindication. By the way, of course, you're always welcome to join in on anything I've said or any other topic I haven't raised at 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I may just skip the break trying to get as much in as I can. But I want to talk about Dan Rather because the right is very, very clever in how they fight their battles. And one of the best ways to attack someone, any psychologist will tell you, any political psychologist will definitely tell you, one of the best ways to attack someone is mockery. It's an extremely powerful weapon. Particularly when you can't answer someone's charges head on. Remember how the right attacked John Kerry for windsurfing. Now, windsurfing, I can tell you, as someone who tried it once, ain't easy at all. It requires tremendous athletic dexterity. It's not at all. You have to be strong. You have to be quick. It's a tough sport. But, it's one of them elite things that they could use to attack John Kerry because, Joe Sixpack's never gone windsurfing before. But it had nothing whatsoever to do with anything John Kerry was saying or doing. I mean, I attacked John Kerry on all kinds of things. I wouldn't attack the guy for windsurfing. Well, Dan Rather hit on an amazing story back in 2004 when George Bush was running for re-election, and it's a story that the media had already decided not to address. It was the story of George Bush's going absent without leave from the National Guard. Now, who can forget in the 90s how everyone talked about Bill Clinton as a draft dodger? He's a draft dodger. Bill Clinton was unfaithful to his country. I mean, this guy is a draft dodger. Remember all that talk? The media definitely talked about that, and certainly the right-wing spin machine did. Well, I got news for you that I would bet would surprise at least some of you listening to me now. Bill Clinton never dodged the draft. I will repeat. Bill Clinton never dodged the draft. You know how I know this? Because, breaking story here, Bill Clinton was never drafted. He wasn't drafted. He didn't run to England to escape the draft. The kid was never drafted. His number never came up in the lottery that was used to choose who goes to Vietnam and who doesn't. His number never came up. He got lucky. Now, I'm sure Clinton didn't want to go, but he never dodged the draft. His number never came up. Dick Cheney's number came up. We know that. Dick Cheney was going to be sent to Vietnam, and so he got 5 student deferments. Dick Cheney, we know for a fact, is a 5-time draft dodger. The man who is sending thousands of Americans to their deaths, tens of thousands of Americans to be permanently injured with amputated limbs, and hundreds of thousands post-traumatic stress disorder, and then not to mention the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Iraqis. This man is a 5-time draft dodger. Now, if you Google Cheney and draft dodger, are you going to find 100 hits? I don't know. I doubt it. Google draft dodger and Clinton, and you'll find hundreds of thousands of hits. But how does this all relate to Dan Rather and to mockery? And because Dan Rather discovered something. A news story that, frankly, had been around a while. I had reported on it. Others had reported on it in 2000, not that many, but had reported on it before me. In fact, the author of a book called Fortunate Son detailed all the circumstances until they found out that the author himself had committed a crime. Now, what that had to do with his scholarship, I don't know. I mean, it's an amazing thing. Author unearths all kinds of things that George Bush did as a fortunate son to get out of the draft. They find out that the author himself has committed a crime. All right, bad thing. Don't commit crimes. And they decide, therefore, that the book is discredited? I don't get it. It's all one of those attacks. Don't attack what John Kerry's saying. Attack that he windsurfs. Don't attack what the author is saying. Attack that he committed a crime. That book, Fortunate Son, the publisher decided to not publish the book because of that. So I picked up the story prior to Dan Rather, I have to say. I picked it up back when Wesley Clark, in fact, was Michael Moore said that he went George Bush was a deserter, and I was defending Wesley Clark at the time, and Wesley Clark was attacked for not distancing himself from Michael Moore. So I decided to look into the issue. I did a lot of research. It was all available on the internet. And by the way, you could still read the whole story, and I want to plug it. It's linked to it from today's website, RadioInsideScoop.com. I really think if you've got the time, you should spend a half an hour, maybe an hour, and read my report from February 2004. Because I don't just have the facts, I have the documents. And what did the documents show? Yes, of course, he was AWOL. Now, he may not have been a technical deserter, and I go through and I show the law, the difference between desertion and AWOL, and I show why actually George Bush wasn't a deserter, he was AWOL, okay? He was absent without leave, he wasn't a deserter, because you have to be in the military, and he wasn't in the military, he was in the National Guard. All right, fine. I was fair. So what happened with Dan Rather? Dan Rather got punked. Probably, and I can't prove this, but probably by Karl Rove. Dan Rather took a true story that no one really disputes, who knows what's going on, that George Bush got favorable treatment. I've had the former Speaker of the Texas Legislature come on this program and talk about how he gave favored treatment at that time to George Bush. He called up people and got him out because he was going to be drafted into the National Guard, the Champaign Unit, they call it, the Texas National Guard. And he refused to show up. I have the actual documents. It's right there on the website. You can click on them, which show that George Bush refused to show up in Alabama because he was going to be given a medical exam. And this was a kid who had a lot of trouble with the cocaine, a lot of trouble with the powder up his nose, so much trouble that he was literally beating his father, George Sr. They don't talk about that a lot, when a son physically attacks his father. Now, speaking of the Gen of Six, why don't we put, you know, George W. Bush in jail for elder abuse? He had a real cocaine problem, it seems. Otherwise, why would he risk going AWOL just to avoid a medical examination? In any case, I have all the details and all the documents. You can click right there at Week in Review, and I really encourage you to do that. It's a story that's never gotten full enough play. But Dan Rather, what does he do? He has the secretary of the person that got George Bush out of the draft and into the National Guard. And she says that there are documents that say, you know, hey, he's the son of a congressman, let's give him special treatment, in effect. And then Dan got actual documents, he thought, that corroborated everything that this secretary said. And then someone pointed out, probably the same person who gave him the documents, right? Probably Karl Rove. Here's exactly how I think it happened. There are people who are like me, determined to get the truth on George Bush, and there was a guy who had looked into the story a lot and had found out a lot of the details. And I think Karl Rove, through various sources, he's very good at this. Remember, this is Karl Rove is the guy who used another campaign's literature and forged it in the past, right? I think Karl Rove or his associates forged these documents using things like modern typewriters, you know, modern word processors. Got these documents to, I think his name was Burkhead. Was that his name? Burkett. Burkett, I think, was the name. Burkett fed them unknowingly to Dan Rather. And the documents corroborated everything Rather had heard from the secretary, from everything else. Then Karl Rove, or whomever did this, sent out word, hey, these documents can't be real, because of the proportional space and so forth. And therefore, we're going to dispute the whole story. Now, anyone with a basic understanding of logic understands the logical fallacy in what the media did next. Here's what the media said. Dan Rather has a story. He's got witnesses. He's got some documents. He's got other documents. They all tell the same story. All the witnesses, all the documents, that George Bush got favorable treatment in the National Guard. All right, so you've got 7 human witnesses and 100 documents all tell the same story. These 10 documents, we can prove, are forgeries. Therefore, the entire story is untrue. Do you understand the logical fallacy there? You got 7 witnesses and 100 documents all telling the same story. 10 documents are provable forgeries. Therefore, the entire story is untrue. And yet, people bought it. People bought it. Yes, the particular documents Dan Rather had were forgeries. Some of them were. But does that mean that the secretary was lying? Does that mean that the former speaker of the Texas House was lying? Does that mean that all the dozens of documents that I linked to in my report on this, which do not have the proportional spacing problems, by the way, folks. These are actual documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act from the Texas National Guard. Is someone telling me the Texas National Guard is forging documents here? What makes all of them false? Nothing. It was extremely clever. All you do is show part of a story to be false, and you are able to ruin the entire story. And so here is this newsman of 40 years, respected newsman Dan Rather, for all his quirks, telling a truthful story, getting punked with a few fake documents, and they use it to take down Dan Rather, to completely ruin him and ruin his career. God bless Dan Rather for seeking vindication. I love his lawsuit. It's a terrific thing. It may be too late. Bush has been reelected. Well, reselected. But at least it shows the power of the right wing in using very clever tactics to take something down. And don't let anyone ever tell you that if you've got 100 pieces of evidence pointing to a conclusion and 10 are shown to be forgeries, that the other 90 don't point to the same conclusion. I think if this hopefully will get the media attention it deserves, this could be a real eye-opening experience to Americans. You go for it, Dan Rather. And how does the right wing respond? The way they always respond to truth, with mockery. When you can't fight the truth, mock it. Mock it. That's Rush Limbaugh's tactic, right? Feminazis. He really can't argue with feminism, the idea that women should have equal rights to men, the idea they shouldn't be paid, less than men. It's very hard to argue with feminism as a philosophy, but it's very easy to mock. And we should recognize the power, unfortunately, of human beings to listen to the mockery rather than to the evidence. Got a few minutes left. Of course, like I said, I am going to go into the next hour. We will definitely not get to S-Chip in this hour, but we will definitely get into it at the outset of Bob Kincaid's show. In my few minutes left, I want to talk briefly about the Middle East, specifically about Israel and the territories. Hamas is strengthening its rule over Gaza. It is brutally beating political opponents. It is incarcerating them. It is executing them. It's interesting. These political opponents are, they're Fatah. They're the old Arafat. These are the old Palestinian leadership. But let no one think that Hamas, just because it won election in 05, is going to permit another such election. And meanwhile, what they're doing, of course, is they're raining missiles into Israel. And Israel has responded by saying, we want to cut off electricity to Gaza. And the world has said, oh, Israel, don't do that. That's too harsh. Really? Really? When we were attacked by another country, we went into that country and completely disabled the country. Israel just wants to cut off electricity. Are you required to give electricity to your enemy? Gaza borders Egypt. If Egypt wants to provide Gaza electricity, they can. But it's shocking to me that here you have a country, Gaza, that's taken hundreds of missiles a day, raining them on Israel, and Israel is supposed to not only not respond militarily, they can't even cut off the electricity. Come on. But Israel, to its discredit, has listened to the world powers and is not cutting off electricity. It's simply waiting and watching its citizens as they get hit by the missiles. I think Israel should take a stronger stand. One stronger stand they may have taken recently is fascinating for what we don't know. There is reason to believe quite possibly that Israel bombed a Syrian nuclear plant. And we don't know the details, but it's a fascinating thing because Syria has stopped complaining. And that's what's so interesting. After all, if it were just an attack on Syria, you'd think Syria would go crazy. But they don't want to admit that they're trying to get nuclear technology. My take on this, and I don't have any proof or inside knowledge on it, my take on it is that it wasn't a nuclear plant, but rather a dirty bomb. Radioactive material that was shipped over by North Korea, and Israel took it out. And it's amazing because Israel's saying nothing about it, and Syria hasn't complaining either. fascinating going on in our times. My show is up now, but we're going to get right into more of the Week in Review as soon as Bob Kincaid begins at the top of the hour. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. will impose economic sanctions against Myanmar in response to the recent military crackdown there. The U.S. Treasury Department will freeze assets of the 14 military officials who have led the action. It is the second day of the government crackdown on pro-democracy protesters. 9 people were killed as security forces fired automatic weapons into the crowds. Tens of thousands of protesters, many of whom are monks, have demonstrated in the country's largest city for 10 days in a row. There are also reports that overnight government forces raided several monasteries. Monks were reportedly beaten and more than 100 were arrested. According to a congressional investigation, the actions of private security company Blackwater USA caused a battle in Iraq in 2004 that killed 4 of the U.S. guards in Fallujah. Their bodies were then mutilated and dragged, and this triggered a major month-long conflict. The report found that the security guards were unprepared to go into the insurgent stronghold. In Iraq, the country's vice president, a Sunni, met with the top Shiite cleric. They are trying to agree on political reforms that would unite the country and end the violence. More than 50 people were killed in Iraq yesterday in a wave of bombings and shootings. Al-Qaeda has promised a new offensive during the current holy month of Ramadan. NBC News reports that last month a U.S. and Afghan military mission in Tora Bora almost captured a high-value target believed to possibly be Osama bin Laden. The operation took place over 3 days and nights and left dozens of Al-Qaeda and Taliban members dead. Iran's president is in Bolivia as part of a trip to strengthen his country's ties to Latin America. He is seen by some leftist leaders as a way to counter U.S. influence, especially as an energy and trade partner. In Louisiana, the prosecutor in the Jenna 6 case will not challenge the ruling that sent the case for one of the 6 suspects to juvenile court as opposed to trying the 17-year-old as an adult.